I recently came across Denny Lambert, former NHL player, at the Whitby Silver Stick Tournament, a tournament that showcases the best minor midget players in Ontario. I had the privilege of knowing Denny throughout his pro career when I was counsel with the National Hockey League Players Association. Denny played over 500 games in the NHL, both regular season and playoffs, during his 12-year professional career. Born in Wawa, Ontario, Denny played in the Ontario Hockey League for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds before turning professional. The key about Denny Lambert that you should know is that Denny was never drafted into the Ontario Hockey League nor the NHL. Just a symbol of hard work, dedication, perseverance, and a man that was committed to his craft, which was playing the game of hockey. After his pro career, Denny went on to coach the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds and was part of the Gatineau Olympic in the Quebec Hockey League as well. Denny is part of the Batchewana First Nation. He currently is a First Nations police constable, along with his scouting duties with the Sudbury Wolves. Denny, thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Ian. It was great running into you and getting caught up on things. It's been a long time, so it was great to see you, and I'm looking forward to doing this interview.
Yeah, you know, it was fun. Like, I was just walking along, and behind the COVID mask, I hear, you know, "Hey, Ian, how you doing?" And, you know, it took me a little bit to, you know, go through the files in my mind of all the players. And I was able to see beyond the mask, which you were wearing, to see that it was the great Denny Lambert, which was a thrill to see you again. So, hey, I guess being in the rinks, you know, with the Sudbury Wolves now as a scout brings back probably memories of when you played hockey. When you were, you know, before the Ontario League, where did you play your minor midget, and what organization did you grow up in?
Actually, it's an interesting story. I lived in Wawa, Ontario, which is about 2 hours north. It's a small community. So obviously not being scouted up there. So I had to move to Sault Ste. Marie, and I moved about at the Pee Wee level. I came down to play AAA hockey down here. Unfortunately, I didn't make the top AAA team. So my story goes on. I tried to go for the Bantam, but I didn't make the Bantam AAA. Finally, my midget AAA years, the year that I played for the Sioux Legion, which was the big team back in the day, but it took me three times to crack even that level. So I had to make the move though, otherwise I wouldn't have been scouted. And I thought I played pretty good, and I seen the people get drafted. So I was kind of disappointed when the OHL draft came by and I didn't get a chance to get drafted. So it's a long story, but it's an interesting one for sure.
And so when you went up to the Sioux, where did you live? Did you billet with a family, or did you have family up there, or how did that work?
No, you know what? My mother and my father got divorced, and my mother always wanted to come to Sault Ste. Marie. So the timing was unfortunately hard at home, but it was good timing for my hockey career. So I ended up, my mother had a job down here. I lived with her. So it was nice to have, be able to stay with my mother and not have to build it out and all that, because I'm sure at that time of my life, it would have been very hard to leave my home, my small hometown, and it would have been very difficult, but thankfully, my mother was there, and, I was able to live with her and concentrate on hockey.
Right. And, so were there, before you hit the OHL, were there any local hockey coaches in the Sioux, or any influences on you that helped you kind of forge your path, or was it kind of self-taught through dedication, love of the game, and, you know, wanting to obviously prove people wrong because you got bypassed for the Ontario Hockey League draft? What were there any influences that stand out?
Yeah, there was a big influence. Unfortunately, he's passed away now. His name was Donnie Carrillo, and he was the head coach of the midget team. It was the first, like, it's hard to crack a lineup when you're coming from a different city, especially from a small town city coming here. So with him giving me the opportunity, the chance, it really opened up the doors. He made me his captain, actually, which put a lot of responsibility on myself. And it was he was instrumental in me developing as a hockey player and a person. And he really helped me. And, you know, he made me believe in myself. And he gave me the belief that I could do anything I wanted to do. And, you know, I obviously didn't let him down. He was a big influence, big part of my first initial interaction with coaches that would help me along my way, because there is other ones that have really helped me, especially in my junior career when I ran into Teddy Nolan, right? Teddy Nolan was basically a father. He was like a father figure to me. He was a First Nation person. He went through the same thing. He played in the NHL. He was drafted late rounds, played for Detroit, then became a coach. So being him guiding me, and he knew the right buttons to push on me. There was a couple times actually I almost quit and told Teddy, I'm done, I'm quitting hockey. And he said, zero chance you're quitting hockey. You're gonna work through this time and you're gonna get through it. And he was very instrumental in
And are you still in touch with Ted Nolan?
I touch base with Teddy all the time. We always keep in touch. Our families know each other, you know, with the boys there. Even the chance of me later on in my career being able to coach Jordan. That was a neat thing to do, where I saw myself and Teddy with Jordan coaching him. I saw a lot of things going on there that I was kind of, what I learned from Teddy, I was starting to bring on to Jordan, and it worked out well for Jordan, and it was great to have a relationship with them and the Nolans.
Things come full circle sometimes when you least expect it, and that's a kind of a neat story. So, you know, you were regarded as a pro hockey player through Anaheim, Ottawa, Nashville, and Atlanta, as being pound for pound one of the hardest working and toughest players to play. I mean, you never took a shift off, and your determination and resilience, where did that come from? Was it, you know, through your time before, you know, playing minor hockey? Were you like that in minor hockey? And then did Teddy Nolan play a role in that? Because, man, the way you played was the hard right way. And how did you get that? Or was it just part of you?
Well, I think it is just part of you, because I just love the game. Even when I was a kid, I just, give me the puck, I'm going to help us win the game here. I didn't really care about anything else. I just knew I had to drive really hard. Everything comes into a factor, right? Teddy does become a factor. But I think growing up in a small town, not having anything given to me at all, we were poor growing up, separated family, fighting through that, leaving home. I think it builds your character and resilient. You just figure out how to do it. And once I didn't make those teams, and I saw the people that were making the teams, that I got pretty frustrated. And even at a young age, I'm like, well, I'm just as good as that guy. Why is that guy making that team and I'm not? Why is that guy getting drafted and I didn't get drafted? So those things, when you get kind of knocked down, the best thing is to get right back up and go at it and prove everybody wrong. So it was internally driven within me just to prove people wrong that I was a small First Nation kid from Wall, Ontario, up in Northern Ontario with nobody. You know, it just gave me the internal drive that I wanted to play in the National Hockey League. I didn't know how I was going to get there. I really didn't know. All I know is one part of my game that became obviously a part of it was fighting. And when I tried out for Suzanne Marie Greyhounds, I never been in a fight really until that first year. And that first year in my tryout, I end up fighting the toughest guy from Thunder Bay, and I end up beating him. And that kind of, the coaches loved it, the players loved it. So it kind of gave me a good feeling, warm feeling. Hey, people like that when I do that. It makes me feel good. So I think getting those experiences and going through those kind of things that's what gave me the drive and the determination that I was going to make it to the NHL.
You know, it's funny because all over the map, it's the same issues that occur for players, whether they're, you know, playing youth hockey, you know, in the OHL or junior hockey, and then in pro, you know, why is this guy making it? Why aren't I, you know, why is this guy being promoted? Why does the coach like this guy? And, you know, staying in your lane and getting back up after you get knocked down, like you said, is so true. And with social media and everything else, so rings true today that, you know, those that stay in their lane and have that dedication, perseverance, and love for the game, you know, are in a better spot, in my opinion, to have success at the next level, and then the next level, and then the final level of the pro hockey. So next question, you know, you amassed over 1,300 penalty minutes in your career, but what's remarkable about you and your career path is how durable you were. Like, I mean, very few had that durability where every year you were at 70 plus games a year. How hard was that? And I guess, did you play through an injury? Was the thirst and the reality of being in the league and not wanting to lose your job a driving motivational factor for you? Because it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know, you start off when you go back to the gym and you're working out and you're conditioning and how you're eating off the ice and what you're resting. And I did all that right, so that I kind of was always in really good shape. And like you said, nobody knows. Everybody sees Danny Lambert playing the NHL fight and all that stuff, but nobody saw me work out three times a day at the gym at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night, burying myself on the bike. These are things that I did. And just in general, my body is not like 6'5", where I have a long, lengthy body where there's wear and tear a little bit harder. I got kind of a compact, strong body, so that helped out in that area too. So those are some of the things that helped me have such a long career without getting injured. And did I have some injuries? I've had injuries. The amount of times that we fought back in the day, when we used to have those old leather gloves, when they dried out, they were stiff as ever. So in the mornings after you got in a scrap, your knuckles would be all ripped off. And then you're trying to put your hand inside that glove. It's like just pain. But I had a pretty high pain tolerance. I didn't mind playing through a little bit of aches and bruises. It didn't bother me at all. As once I warmed up and in the game, I was ready to go. It didn't matter. So I think a little bit of it was my personality that I just, you know, you got a couple nicks here and there. You got some bruises or pains, big deal. I just fought through it. And like you said, fortunately, I was very fortunate not to be injured too many times. I think maybe twice in my career. All the fights that I had, never had a broken nose, a couple black eyes, that was it. I was a smart fighter. I didn't try to do things and like where I'd open up and it'd be in danger. So a lot of smartness went into to my play and my thought process through fighting with the big guys, because they were all bigger than me.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah. You know, as you scout today, if you had a message, a compact message on what works and really what doesn't, is there anything that jumps out at you when you're out looking at young players now? And even, you know, from your years of coaching in junior hockey, are there certain things that work and certain things that don't work? I mean, I guess you've touched upon a couple of those things in your own career, and that is, you know, you were not entitled, nothing was ever given to you. But is there any message you could give the young players that are aspiring to play junior hockey, college hockey, or pro hockey?
Yeah, I think at all those levels, I think if you're a one-and-done player, you're not going to make it. Like, if you go into a battle and put one effort in, and the battle's done for you, somebody beat you, you will not make it. The NHL or the OHL, you need to be in the battle. You need to have second, third, fourth efforts. You need to continually be on your game and in people's space and always reading and reacting very quickly. But really be tenacious and read and react. Hockey sense, right, is a big part of it. To me, a one-and-done player, I don't want to have on my team, because that's going to be a light player. I want a heavy player that's going to make himself strong. He's going to win the battles. He's going to win his one-on-ones. Even for a goal scorer, if you're a goal scorer, you can't be just a one-shot thing. You got to be intense. You got to get that goal. You got to find it. If you don't have a shot, you got to find another spot. You're always looking for the next thing, right? So to me, it's always wanting to do a little bit more. Be prepared, too. The other thing is your body. If your body is in shape and you're prepared for your season or your game coming up, whatever you're trying to do, your mind will answer. Your mind will be there. Everything else will fall into place. So the biggest thing is make sure you're in really good shape.
Great, great advice. I couldn't agree more. So let's shift gears for a second here and tell us a bit about your work as a First Nations constable. You like your duties and responsibilities, and how did you, what prompted you to get involved and do that? So fill us in.
Well, you know, when I was coaching the Greyhounds, I wanted to be in here like Brian Kilray, coaching your hometown forever, but it didn't work out. So at that time, when I got relieved of my duties with Sioux Greyhounds, my kids were just in school. They were going into grade 9 and high school, a very important time in their lives, and I didn't want to disrupt them. So I would have had to move and start traveling around. So at that time, I still had 2.5 years left on my contract, so that actually was good because it gave me some time to start exploring different kinds of jobs. So I started exploring different kinds of jobs. I looked at firefighting, I looked at real estate, I looked at policing, and that's when I went through all these stages, and I tried a little bit of everything, read up on it, and went to see what they did, volunteered some time, and the one thing that came that I kind of felt was really good was still a team and you work with people and you're there to protect people and help people was policing. And so I went down to Garden River, which is another First Nation, and they're Anishinaabeg Police Service, and they had an opening. So the guy I knew there, he hired me and he sent me away to school. And then I came back and then I transferred over to my First Nation, which is Batchewana First Nation, which is basically connected to Sault Ste. Marie. But It was basically that thought process of helping people. Sometimes it's not very nice. There's not good things to see and all that stuff. But in your mind, you got to tell yourself that you're always there to help the person.
Right.
And me being able to come home and stay at home and have a good job and be like in Sault Ste. Marie basically is connected was one of the reasons why I chose policing. That's how I got into it. I just didn't want to travel around anymore. This gave me a stability. You're working every, you know, you got your 40-hour week, and it's a great job. You get out in the community, you get to meet people, you get to be around them. Like I said, there is some times where it's very tough. I deal with drugs, I deal with weapons, I deal with assaults, domestic assaults, lots of violence. So a lot of stuff is not good and all that stuff, but a lot of stuff is still good when you get into community and involved in there.
And how long did it take you through constable training to get your badge?
It's kind of funny because everything happened so fast. Like I had an interview on a Monday. This doesn't usually happen this way. They just had a position open. So
right.
I had an interview on a Monday. On Thursday, they came over to my house and said, met my family and did their background check. Friday, they called me in for a meeting, said, yeah, you got the job. They said, okay, well, training starts in Elmer on Monday. So you got the weekend here and you got to get down there. So
and how long was
The training is 3 months.
Okay. Right.
So the training was 3 months, and it was day one was hard. Day two was harder. Day three, it just kept getting harder because they started introducing assaults, so your weapons, how you're trained. I was learning not X's and O's in hockey anymore. No 2-on-2 forecheck or back check, and there's nothing like that. That's all I ever knew. Now I'm learning about tactical fighting, weaponry, the laws of society, of the criminal code, Highway Traffic Act. This was hard.
Right.
Extremely hard, but it's
so it sounds like it was hard. It sounds like it's harder than fighting McSorley, Baumgartner, or Domi.
I told them already when I was going through, I said, I'd rather fight those guys right now than go to this school, because going back to school at 42 years old, or actually it was maybe 45, was very difficult. But again, hard work. Dedication. I was coming home on weekends, but I was falling behind. So then I had to stay down there. I couldn't come home anymore and see my family. I had to give that up. So I gave that up and I stayed down and studied on the weekends with people. And I was able to pass the course. And it was tough. It's very fulfilling though, like now that I've been a constable for 5 years.
Now, like the lessons that you learned from your hockey through your success in hockey, junior and pro careers, never being drafted, then persevering, going into coaching. It sounds like the same characteristics, or if you want to call them cliches, apply to anything we do, whether it's becoming a constable, you know, a carpenter, a chef. It all comes down to working hard, nose to the grindstone, telling the truth, and outworking the next person.
100%. It's no different than hockey, right? Somebody's there to take your job. If you don't do your right thing in policing and follow all the steps that you have to, somebody else will be willing to take it. So it's tough, and you got to stay focused. You got to have a plan. You got to have determination. You can't, is it going to be perfect sailing all the way through in a hockey career or policing career? No, you're going to have ups and downs. It's going to be all over, but you got to make sure that you're pretty stable and, you know, mentally you stay sound, and physically you stay in good shape. And, you know, that's, you got to expect that kind of stuff, but yes, definitely stay focused and work hard.
Are there any programs in your First Nations community that are promoting athletes and you know, future hockey players that we should know about, or that are being players that are being, or athletes being celebrated, whether hockey or any other sports? Are you satisfied, content, or do these programs need to be better?
You know what? COVID's been so hard on everybody,
right?
Lately, right through the beginning, and it's been getting really long. So there, we haven't seen a lot of stuff going on right now. A lot of things get canceled, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's a little NHL. I don't know if you've ever heard of the little NHL, but that's a huge tournament for all ages, girls and boys, which is a great tournament. Usually held down south. In Six Nations, I believe, but you know, they have that. I don't think they've had it in the past year, and hopefully they can have it this year.
Right.
But yeah, just things have been canceled, like with everything else. Everybody knows the situation we're in, so it's been tough. But yeah, those, you know, anytime First Nation communities or members have a chance to do what we, like I did, or play in the NHL, or do other things, that's very important for our community members. It's very important for us to be role models to the young kids, and even the parents growing up. Like, they're all our friends, and we talk to each other and make sure that everybody's helping each other.
Yep. Good to hear. So finally, if any of the listeners are coming up to the Sioux, is there a special Denny Lambert restaurant, diner, or whatnot that they should go check out that you could recommend, where, you know, if you're not worried about what you put into your body, your diet, and you want a great meal up in the Sioux, where would Denny Lambert possibly be going on a Friday night for dinner up there?
Well, Friday night, I live on a golf course. So
right.
There's an unbelievable restaurant. It's called Embers. So that's where I always go. I go up the street here a little bit to Embers, which is very, very good.
Okay.
And
all
after
right.
That, I'm going to the 2 Grand hockey game.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, Denny, great catching up with you. You have a great story. And I hope you have continued success with your role and job in as a constable, and you know, your love for the game, and continuing to watch minor hockey, youth hockey, junior hockey, and the like. And thanks for joining us.